warning, warning, there's truth overhead. It gets beyond all the headlines you read. Don't need lip service with a wink and a nod. You need a man on a mission from God. Well, not to worry, here's Bob and your life.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to Bob and Your Live. I'm the pastor of Denver Bible Church. Last week, we had a Canadian firebrand on this show, Pamela McCall, one of the leaders in the movement to warn the public about the effects of marijuana. And through that program, in fact, I think I need to thank a doctor in the Bay Area in California for that interview coming about, Dr. Philip Drum. And we have him on the line. Dr. Drum, welcome to Bob and Yurt Live.
Thank you very much.
I think you told Pamela about our website. Is that right?
That's correct. I was sent your website by another advocate in the United States. There's a bunch of us out here that are trying to get the truth told about marijuana.
Wow, it's an uphill battle. Some people could be discouraged because of how destructive it is, even leading to death. But that was a very encouraging interview with Pamela. Could we begin with what kills Americans? What is it that's killing us, Dr. Drum?
Certainly, and I'll be sending you a link to this article that I'll be talking about. It's from researchers from Our World in Data, produced a report that came out that I saw recently this week. And I think a lot of people, you know, when they think of what causes death in the United States, and this is 2016 data, the leading cause of death is heart disease. 30% of people are passing away in the United States from heart disease. 29.5% is cancer. And the third leading cause of death in the United States of America is road incidents, falls, and accidents at 7.6%.
All right.
So this is the third leading cause of death.
Third leading, and obviously drunkenness and being high, smoking pot. I've had plenty of people tell me over the years that they're more creative, they do better work, they drive better when they've been smoking marijuana. And of course, this is not true. This is their absurd subjective opinion. But in Colorado, we've had a significant increase since we've decriminalized marijuana, of emergency room visits, crashes. And here in other early adopter states are seeing an increase in vehicular deaths.
Yeah, it's very true. And again, this is all the false narrative that's being put out there. The propaganda from this industry is just astounding. And this has been going on for decades. I think everybody thinks of Cheech and Chong and, you know, people sitting in a parked car and they ask how they're driving and they're not even moving. That's not reality. I work with a researcher named Al Kranzer. He's a former National Highway Transportation Safety Authority researcher who wrote an article in Science in 1969 about the hazards of alcohol and marijuana and or marijuana in people in driving, which they were using, having individuals smoke and then go on the driving simulator. And they showed that they were speeding in 1969. And research that I've done with Al more recently, looking at our fatality analysis reporting system here in the United States, looking at the deaths. I don't know if people realize, but there is a computer chip in our car that tells us, you know, allows the investigators to look and see how fast was the car going at the time of the crash. And we pulled that data and looked at it. For marijuana positive cases, they're speeding 30% of the time in fatal crashes. It's about 40% for alcohol. And when you combine the two, about 49% of fatal crashes involving alcohol and marijuana, the person is speeding.
Well, so marijuana
is reality.
Marijuana has never killed anyone. I've been assured of that dozens of times. We point out a headline, a crane operator, somebody driving a train, you know, people on marijuana, and they end up killing many people, and yet this myth continues that marijuana has never killed anybody. In your list of what kills Americans, could you go down a little further? You started with heart, cancer, crashes. because I'm sure eventually we're going to get to suicide, and that involves mental illness and depression. So what else is on your list there, doctor?
It takes a while to get down to suicide. So number 4 is lung disease. Number 5 is Alzheimer's. Number 6 is stroke. Number 7 is diabetes. Number 8 is overdose that you hear quite a bit about. But the reality is that's the 8th leading cause of death at 2.8%. Number 9 is kidney disease. Number 10 is pneumonia, flu. Number 11 is suicide at 1.8%. Homicide is less than 1%, and terrorism is less than 1%. But we hear about that in the media all the time.
Yes, so with all the attention on terrorism, obviously it does deserve attention, but to put things in perspective, suicide killing so many more people. In fact, a recent study just published yesterday in the Journal of the American Medical Association, the question is, why are so many American teenagers dying by suicide? And it is a leading cause of death of young people in America. And it seems that the researchers are not interested in whether or not these kids have THC in their blood. Do you find that that's true?
Right. I think it's very true. In fact, the Colorado experience is the number one drug found in teenagers who commit suicide is marijuana. That's the number one drug found in teen suicides in the state of Colorado.
That's devastating.
Number 2 is alcohol, and opiates are far down the line. So, again, there's an agenda out there. There's propaganda going on,
right?
And they're not telling you the truth. You can find this on the government's website there in Colorado.
It's almost as though we're repeating the lie, the industry lie, that smoking cigarettes was safe. Smoking cigarettes doesn't lead to lung cancer. And now it's all over again, only with something even more deadly, because not only does it harm your lungs and, in fact, your heart, the blood flow in your brain, but it also affects your mental health. And not in a minor way. We're seeing significant percentages of new admissions and diagnoses for psychosis, paranoia, being people who smoke marijuana regularly.
Yes, that's true. We're also seeing the hyperemesis syndrome cases, you know, plugging up our emergency rooms, in which there isn't a pharmacologic treatment. We cannot give them drugs for them to stop vomiting. We can only give them supportive care, in which we're trying to rehydrate them so that we could protect their kidneys so they don't go into kidney failure or have electrolyte abnormalities so that they start having heart attacks. And so we can't do anything. How they treat this is, number one, you stop using marijuana. Number 2, they could potentially put them in hot showers. They found that, putting raising the body temperature does have an impact in their nausea and vomiting. And so I've heard of cases in which the person's actually scalded themselves, burnt themselves by getting in such hot water to try and stop the nausea and vomiting caused by marijuana.
We're speaking with Dr. Philip Drumm from California. When Pamela McCall was on last week, we mentioned the fact that people will smoke marijuana, they'll self-diagnose, and then they'll determine their dosage, how much marijuana they're going to ingest, they're going to smoke to treat an ailment, and they'll actually get worse. Like with nausea, one of the symptoms of people self-admitting to emergency rooms is this cyclic vomiting syndrome. It comes with smoking marijuana regularly, and so people who are nauseous, including women who are pregnant, will smoke pot thinking it's going to help them, and many people end up in the emergency room because they can't stop vomiting because of their pot smoke.
Right. And the marijuana industry, again, is used a lot of people aren't aware that the FDA did approve Delta-9 THC, that psychoactive component found in marijuana, back in 1985. I used it. I was an oncology pharmacist, and I used it on some cancer patients in 1986. Okay, so it's called dronabinol. It's FDA approved. It has warnings about not using it in pregnant women.
Could you spell that? You used to be a pharmacist, I know. So could you spell that? That Delta 9 THC, what was that drug name for that?
It's called, the trade name is called Marinol, Marinol. And the generic name, because it is generic, it's been around now so long that it's generic. It's Dronabinol, Dronabinol. Again, it's been around so long.
Dr. Drum, we've brought this up over the years on this program that THC has been available in prescription form for decades. The last time I had a textbook author in the studio here just a few days ago, and we argued over this, and I didn't have the data at my fingertips. Now I will. In fact, I'm going to send an email to this author saying that THC has been available as a prescription for decades in America.
Correct.
Yeah.
And here's another key point. The FDA has said that the maximum dose that they've allowed is 10 milligrams. So it's 2.5, 5, and 10 milligrams of THC. So I guess, you know, how can they explain to me that 10 milligrams is the quote-unquote normal dose? That's the maximum dose approved by the Food and Drug Administration. And I'd also add the indications for dronabinol when they came out was for dronabinol. It wasn't for marijuana. It was for dronabinol, and it was nausea and vomiting associated with chemotherapy. Associated with chemotherapy, not just I'm feeling sick, not for
right.
pregnant women.
Right.
It was for chemotherapy, and it was also approved for weight loss from AIDS patients because prior to, in 1985, 86, we did not have any antiretrovirals. And so people were losing weight, and this was something to help, as we know, THC can stimulate the appetite. And so that was the other reason the FDA approved indication. But marijuana was never approved. Marijuana, with its over 60 cannabinoids in this product, with over 400 chemicals, that was not studied. It was dronabinol, Delta-9 THC itself, synthetically created Delta-9 THC, which is the active component in marijuana. We do this all the time with drugs when we find them in these plants. I don't hand over a plant. I don't cut off a piece of the Pacific yew tree and say, here's your paclitaxel and use it for your ovarian cancer. You know, we pull out the paclitaxel out of the Pacific yew tree and we make the drug. And in fact, within a few years after the Pacific yew tree was being decimated, and it's a slow growing like shrub, the pharmaceutical industry synthetically created paclitaxel. And this happens all the time. That we first start with the product coming from the plant derivative, and then we synthetically create it because we then get rid of all the other hazards that are associated with the plant. Things like, pesticides, herbicides, fungicides, bacteria. Nobody wants those things in their drug.
Right.
And so when you're using marijuana as a quote-unquote drug or medical marijuana, there's no such thing. There's no studies being done with smoking marijuana. They're using the Delta-9 THC aspects and claiming, that's ours. And it's like, you can't do that. Accurately study how much is being taken in when somebody's smoking. That's why it's an oral tablet, dronabinol.
Dr. Philip Drum, we here at Bob and Yurt Live, we have connections to people, friends who their lives have been destroyed by smoking marijuana on a daily basis. I mean, truly destroyed. You look on these cases with such sadness. You could grieve over these people. I know that you've had a terribly close connection to this crisis in your sister's case. Could you tell us about her?
Sure. I was like most people. Where I was kind of aware of what was going on. I live in California in 1996. They approved medical marijuana with those bogus claims. And they said, it was only for life-threatening issues. And so, I was out telling people, this is false. We already have dronabinol. This is fake. We have the FDA-approved product.
Yeah.
And again, they kind of, you know, went in the background. I didn't know that they then went to the state and got the abilities. They came out and with the con job of they were going to, it was going to be a co-op. They weren't going to make money off of this.
Yeah, right.
And they then worked with the legislators to now make it a profit generating business. And when that happened, that's when we lost the game, because now they were able to get the money. And with the money, they buy the power. And so they've obviously then spread it to other states. And this is what had happened up in the state of Washington, where my sister lived. She was a nurse, would drive in. A lot of the time she would actually take a bus into downtown Seattle. But it was July 17th of 2012. She was driving into work. At 6:22 in the morning, she was hit head on by now what we know to be a marijuana only driver, impaired driver. He was driving down a center turn lane. He reported to the officer that he felt the car was going too slow for him in front of him, and so he wanted to get around him, and he gets into the center turn lane. And he's passing that car, and he was in that center turn lane for 400 feet, which is the entire length of a football field, including the end zones. He was going 49 miles an hour in a 35, so he was speeding.
Mm-hmm.
And right before he was about ready to strike a vehicle that was stopped in that lane, attempting to make a legal left-hand turn from that center turn lane, he came out of his hallucinogenic haze. Again, it does cause hallucinogenic effects.
Right, of course.
It impairs your ability to see as well. We know that it does that. It causes like a tunnel vision, but you know, they hear things, they see things that aren't there. And so he was driving along, and he finally realized at the last second he was about ready to hit a Cadillac head on. And at the last second, he pulled to the left.
Oh boy.
And there was my sister going the opposite direction.
Oh, no.
So he would have done much less damage had he hit that Cadillac head
right.
on that wasn't moving
right.
from a physics standpoint.
Yeah.
As compared to hitting my sister going 35 in the opposite direction.
Right. Oh, I'm
so he catapults his car up and over my sister's car, loses his front two wheels, and causes an 8-car pileup. My sister was pinned in the car. She had to be cut out. Her neck was broken. He had a broken fingernail. And so as they, when he crawled out of the roof of his Jeep, he immediately started blaming my sister, saying she caused the crash, when it was him all along. In fact, we actually have a videotape of the crash from a local business. Ever hear of Bill and Melinda Gates?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, it was right in front of their office, and their security camera caught the crash just off scene, but you can see him flying through the air, and he causes an 8-car pileup. When they uprighted his car, marijuana and marijuana dispensary cards fell out right in front of the detective. He even admitted to the officer that he had consumed, a week before. By the time they finally got around to drawing his blood 3 hours and 13 minutes later,
right.
his blood level was 3.2. You lose about 70% within the first hour from THC from the bloodstream.
Mm-hmm.
It's a fat-soluble molecule. Oil and water don't mix. So being that this is a fat-soluble molecule, it's going to fat areas, like the biggest fat organ in your body, your brain.
Mm.
And so that's where THC goes. Not going to be in your blood.
So he was 3.2 when they tested him.
So 3 hours and 13 minutes after driving.
So what might he have been in the first 15 minutes if they had tested him?
Much, much higher. You lose 90% within 90 minutes of the blood.
Wow, yeah.
From the blood.
And
we know this.
Yeah.
We know this.
Right.
And so the reality is we cannot back extrapolate to determine what the level was at the time of driving. It's variable, especially not for fat-soluble drugs. The only drug that we know that we can do this with is alcohol.
Hmm.
That's the only one we can back extrapolate.
Okay.
We cannot back extrapolate an opiate or a benzodiazepine or any other type of drugs, Valium, Ativan. You know, we cannot do that with those drugs. The only one we do that with is alcohol. And again, the number that we create, 0.08 blood alcohol, is being impaired. That's the only drug that we've done this for, and that was actually selected by the legislature.
Mm.
That was not, again, based on statistics.
Right.
But again, our major problem that we're having now is polydrug use. Polydrug use is exceeding alcohol in fatalities in the United States, meaning more than one drug. And you have a major problem in Colorado there with marijuana already, and a major problem with it being marijuana and alcohol.
Mm.
So marijuana alone doubles the risk of being involved in a fatal crash. When you add alcohol, and I'm just talking a beer, it will go up to 6 to 8-fold times now the risk of being involved in a crash.
Oh, my.
That's what happens. So you add a beer to that joint, and now you're at 6 to 8-fold risk of being involved. And so this is reality. And and again, that blood alcohol doesn't have to be 0.08. In fact, there was a study that showed 0.05 with 5 nanograms at the time of driving for that THC. Again, by the time you draw the blood 2 hours later, that 5 nanograms is now well below 5.
Right.
And yet the amount of weaving that was seen with the 0.05 blood alcohol plus the 5 nanograms of THC is equivalent to the 0.08 blood alcohol, the amount of weaving.
Your sister, how is she?
My sister was murdered. She was killed.
Oh, I'm so sorry, Dr. Trump.
She was killed. So when people want to tell me marijuana doesn't kill, yes, it does.
Yeah.
Yes, it does. We have many of roadway fatalities. We also have people dying of heart attacks. We had the defense attorney in San Francisco die back in February, and the headlines of the paper were that it was cocaine and alcohol. Well, guess what? He also had THC, and he also had a benzodiazepine in his bloodstream.
Mm.
And so, again, when you combine alcohol with THC, it impairs THC's clearance. So it makes the THC last longer in the body. And they are both central nervous system depressants, meaning it brings you down. And so you're adding now them together.
Wow.
Two things that are affecting your brain.
I want to ask you.
0.08 doesn't mean anything when you start combining it with other central nervous system depressants.
I'd like to ask you about two things you've just mentioned, but just to also say how sorry I am for what happened to your sister. I'm just so sorry, Philip. Just devastating. You mentioned that THC goes primarily to your brain, and you also mentioned that this murderer had only marijuana in his system. We noticed this. For example, there was a horrific crime in Florida, and they called this guy the Miami Cannibal, Rudy Eugene. And it was reported he did such a bizarre, horrific crime. I hate to even describe it on the air. You know, moms are driving around with their kids in the car, so maybe I won't even describe the crime. But the reporters, the story was that he was on bath salts, and it's almost as though they made that up because they're trying to comprehend how could somebody be this evil and this wicked. And then the autopsy comes out, this Rudy Eugene, all he had was THC. That's it. And his girlfriend was interviewed, and she said, yeah, all he smokes is marijuana. He doesn't do any other drugs. And so this is not unusual that people polydrug use, of course, is horrific, but it's not as though if they only smoke pot, then they're safe.
Right. And again, this marijuana alone is now killing, in the state of California, one person a day, 365 days a year. Easily,
wow.
There is one person a day dying in the state of California. We have recorded over 220 back in 2017. But here's why I say it's easily 365, because they're only testing blood in fatal cases in 1 in 4 fatal cases.
Wow.
So if you're not looking for it, you won't find it.
Right. Now, terrorism, that was lower on your list of what kills Americans. And I remember the 14 victims of the San Bernardino terrorist attack. That was 14, and that was a few years ago now. So you're saying one person killed by marijuana per day,
driving,
just in California, and that's
driving,
a conservative estimate.
And that's driving. That's driving.
That's wow, driving. What a great point. That doesn't include suicide, for example.
It does not include suicide.
And other crimes.
It does not include the homicides that are happening. It does not include the butane hash oil explosions that are occurring. At one point, we were told over 30% of the children in the Children's Burn Center in Sacramento were there as a result of a butane hash oil explosion.
Wow.
This is costing our society massively. Who's paying for those skin grafts?
Mm. Yeah, of course.
Who's paying for the addiction?
Dr.
Trump. the emergency room visit.
Right, of course. And the cost to these people themselves and their lives ruined, and the people around them whose lives they're ruining. Dr. Drum, after the interview, I hate to keep bringing up Pamela while, you know, I'm interviewing you, but I think you guys work closely together. After the interview, I asked her, I said, Pamela, you keep bringing up that money is behind all this, but there are millions of people who are aggressively promoting marijuana use who are not making money off of it. And I think money is a component, but there's something bigger. You know, there's a rebellion in human nature, a rebellion against things that are good and right and wholesome. In fact, things that are good and right and wholesome are often mocked by our culture. And so I think that rebellion against what is good is also a major factor. It's not the money.
Yeah, I think, and you've seen this, right? I'm going back to the 60s, right? Who were the anti-establishment people, and what were they doing? Okay.
Yeah.
And you have to see the agenda that continues on. What you have to do is you have to break down the norms of society to then begin to accept these abnormals of society, right?
Yeah.
And so you have to break down the police and blame them for all the problems. You have to break down the pharmaceutical industry because their quote unquote pharmaceutical is much better. So this is what's on the agenda. The other falsehood that they love to claim they're going to do is they're going to regulate it. They have no intention of ever following any regulations.
Of course, you grow your own, you self-diagnose, you decide your own dose. Doctor, we're almost out of time. When THC gets to your brain, could you talk to us about that?
Well, again, we know it's a central nervous system depressant. It causes hallucinogenic effects, whether they be audio or visual hallucinogenic effects occur in these people. It impairs your ability to function properly, to move properly, to think properly. And this doesn't go away. Chronic users are chronically impaired. So don't let people say, oh, I'm a chronic user, I do much better. No, the data's out there where chronic users have memory problems, they have concept formation or planning and sequencing impairment, they have decision-making and risk-taking still seen after 25 days of abstinence. They have attention and concentration deficits in 4 weeks to 2 years after abstinence. They have slower information processing. I mean, all of these things are seen in your chronic users.
Mm-hmm.
And the goal now is to allow this to be brought into our workforce. So those of you that may be industrialists that are hiring people, good luck. Mm. Because what's going to happen to your workforce? If this is going to be allowed to be brought in, you know, they're going to claim, oh, well, we're not using it at work. Well, again, for driving, the recommendations are, it's out of Colorado in 2016. You had a report there in Colorado that talks about the monitoring health concerns related to marijuana in Colorado in 2016. This was made by your Department of Public Health and Environment.
Mm.
And there's a section on use and driving, and it says time to wait before driving. We found substantial evidence that delaying driving for at least 6 hours after smoking less than 18 milligrams of THC allows the THC-induced impairment to resolve or nearly resolve for users who use less than weekly.
Wow.
Not daily users.
Wow.
Users who use less than weekly.
Wow.
And so 18 milligrams, it takes 6 hours if smoked. And it goes on, we found substantial evidence that delaying driving at least 8 hours after oral ingestion of less than 18 milligrams of THC allows for the THC-induced impairment to resolve or nearly resolve for users who use less than weekly.
Wow.
What I'd like to do is real quickly run through, how much is 18 milligrams? So if a joint is a half a gram, and let's just take 12% THC. I don't think you'll ever find any 12%
that
THC
low, right,
in the state of Colorado, but
right,
let's just pretend. So if the joint's a half a gram, that means that joint contains 60 milligrams of THC, and I told you it's 18.
Wow.
So that means you and 2.3 of your best friends would need to consume that 12% THC.
Wow.
So 3.3 of you have to consume it to get 18 milligrams. Let's jack it up to 23%. I know the state of Colorado, the average that I saw back in 2017 was 21%.
Right.
But let's just call it 23%. You have to then 5.4 plus you of your best friend. So six of you have to consume that
joint. A single joint.
For you to get 18 milligrams. That's how little 18 milligrams
and that,
is.
Dr. Drum, we are about out of time. Just real quickly, I got angry at our local newspaper here, the Denver Post. They were quoting a dispensary worker, and they allowed this pothead dispensary worker to refer to his customers as his patients. It was just an outrage. You know, he's talking about his patients, and I was thankful in that article they quoted a professor from just up the street here, CU, the Colorado University of Colorado's School of Pharmacy and Pharmaceutical Sciences, Dr. Carrie Franson, and she said from their research, they see that THC in the brain, it hijacks our receptors that should be used for natural chemicals, neurotransmitters, and THC locks on to these receptors, and it doesn't want to let go. So that normally, if somebody pats you on the back, you get your paycheck, your wife says, honey, thanks for doing a good job, it doesn't mean much to you. Your body is not responding the way a healthy, normal human being should respond to that kind of positive feedback. Instead, the pothead is just looking for his next joint.
Well, so I just want to cover a few things of what you had said. This is called normalization, is what they're trying to do by calling them patients. In reality, again, I would obviously point back to they don't get a prescription. They get a recommendation.
Mm.
So they are not patients. This is a recommendation.
Of course not.
A prescription.
And the pothead dealer wasn't a doctor.
Of course not.
Right.
Of course not. They're a user. That's how they can explain what's happening to them. Just like I don't have to use every medication to know how it's going to work as a pharmacist, but they do. And let me just answer the issue about what's going on in your body. There's actually the way we find things in our body sometimes are not in the normal order, and this is the case with the CB receptors or cannabinoid receptors. We knew that marijuana around for a long time. We knew the chemicals. We knew it was Delta-9 THC. They then found the receptor sites as to where that THC was hitting the receptors in the brain and the body. And they called them then, because this is a cannabinoid, they call them cannabinoid receptors because the cannabinoids were hitting them. But we knew there's no such thing as a natural cannabinoid in your body. There was something that was hitting these receptors, and we found that in the early 90s. It's called anandamide. Anandamide is the natural protein that's made in your body that actually hits that receptor. Okay, it's called anandamide. It is not a cannabinoid. So when they want to lie and say, oh, we have natural cannabinoids in our body, that's a falsehood. And in fact, I would call on science to change the name of those receptors to what they actually are. They're anandamide receptors. Mm. They're not cannabinoid receptors. We found the chemical that actually hits those receptors that's made in the body. It's called anandamide. It's not a cannabinoid.
Dr. Philip Drum, thank you so much for your time. Could we end with, is there something we can do here in the studio? My producer, we're all up in arms over this, and you're even getting us more agitated with anger against those who are lying to kids and to the general population. What can we do?
Well, I'd like for your audience to notify the Department of Transportation when we're talking about marijuana and its impact on driving. I think you know that Mitch McConnell's wife, Elaine Chao, Mitch McConnell, who just pushed through a hemp bill and got hemp approved, which has THC in it. That's the sole reason why they got hemp approved was for the THC. It had nothing to do with cannabinoids or CBD. It had to, or even hemp for string. It had to do with getting that THC out. So Elaine Chao is his wife. She's the U.S. Secretary of Transportation. Contact her. Contact the Deputy Administrator of the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Heidi King. Her number is 888-327-4236. That's 888-327-4236. And tell her we're not going to wait any longer for her to come out with oral swab recommendations to have oral swabs being performed at the roadside within minutes to determine what drug that these people are driving under the influence of. We need our officers to know immediately what substance these people are under the influence of, and they can get the results within 5 to 7 minutes. And this could be done at the roadside.
Okay, so Elaine Chao, Secretary of Transportation, and then Heidi King, her role in the Department of Transportation, what's her role?
She's the deputy administrator, so she is the overseer of that portion of the Department of Transportation.
Okay, 888-327-4236.
We need these oral swabs approved nationally tomorrow.
Wow.
We're not going to continue to wait for this. Other countries have been doing this for decades. And the U.S. is sitting back doing nothing. And all we have is an alcohol of 0.08. It's time they do something tomorrow.
All right. Well, Dr. Philip Drumm, it is an honor to have you on the program. I appreciate your work, and we'll keep in touch, and we'll continue to follow what you're doing.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
Okay, you're welcome. This is Bob Benyart. I'm the pastor of Denver Bible Church. There's another talk show host in town, Dan Kaplis. He's on a competing radio station, but Dan is a hero for fighting to recriminalize marijuana in our state. Hey, God bless you guys.